This is Ozarks at Large. You don't have to search very hard for political movements claiming they have the very core of the United States Constitution as their inspiration. Depending on the ideological bent of an organization, the document is being protected, embraced, or attacked almost every day. Sanford Levinson, a constitutional law scholar, has interest in how Americans perceive the Constitution, though he says we tend to pay too much attention to certain parts and not enough attention to others. And he contends we certainly don't have enough rational national conversations about the Constitution. He's written the book, Framed, America's 51 Constitutions and the Crisis of Governance, and he's on the faculty of the University of Texas Law School. Last month, Sanford Levinson spoke at the University of Arkansas. His topic of discussion, how the concepts of secession and nullification matter in 2013. During his visit to Fayetteville, he also came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about the Constitution. I first asked him about secession, a matter that I suggested may have been put to rest at Appomattox nearly 150 years ago.
People who think about secession in America should begin with the American Revolution, should include Vermont, should include the Texas secession from Mexico, Maine's secession from Massachusetts. And I mean, I've gone so far as to argue, and I think this is an overstatement, but at least before 1861 or 1865, you could argue that in some ways in America, secession is as American as apple pie. I mean, you look at church history in America, and you can view Protestantism as a secessionist movement from the Roman Catholic Church, but especially – I grew up in North Carolina. Especially in the southern states, you realize that the great denominations were not able to maintain themselves, they were always facing secessionist movements.
Sanford Levinson's address on the University of Arkansas campus last month addressed the concept of nullification as well as secession. Nullification is the idea that a state has the legal right to invalidate a federal law that the particular state has declared unconstitutional. Often supporters of an act of nullification cite the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, 28 words that have been debated over since they were first written. One political group, the 10th Amendment Center, advocates for what it calls strict adherence to the 10th Amendment to ensure what it calls true liberty for all. Others think the idea of nullification, like the idea of secession, is a bit of a relic.
One article refers to these ideas as zombie constitutionalism, that is, ideas really arising from the dead. Another very interesting book referred to kind of dinosaur constitutionalism, which is to say ideas that really once were alive and well and had real substance behind them. The first secessionist movements in the United States, besides the Revolution, took place in New England, the Hartford Convention. There were people who talked about secession. It was the abolitionists. It was William Lloyd Garrison who burnt either the flag or the Constitution and said no union with slaveholders, which is certainly a defensible position. So but I think there was this feeling that however large and powerful these ideas were, they became extinct because of the Civil War and Appomattox. But you see people trying to revive them. And so with regard to nullification, the other side of the coin, just north of here, Missouri passed a law that on its face seemed to declare illegal federal gun legislation, and no competent lawyer would say that the state has the power to do that. But this is drawing on certain arguments from the American past. And Missouri isn't alone. Now, it happened ultimately that the Missouri legislature, by one vote, failed to override the governor's veto. But you look at a lot of states, and I think Arkansas might be one of them, where you find members of the legislature who say, in effect, you know, pound the table, I'm so mad, or we all are so mad, we're just not going to take it anymore. And what the state should do is to say the feds not only shouldn't do this, but can't do it. The 10th Amendment says that those powers not assigned to the national government are reserved to the states and to the people. Nobody will take exception with that. The Supreme Court, in a decision in, I think it was 1941, said this is a truism. If the national government doesn't have powers, then somebody else does, and it would be either states or the people. But the 10th Amendment does not supply you with a clue as to what powers have in fact been assigned to the national government. Also, the 10th Amendment lacks a certain very important word, expressly, because the Articles of Confederation that the Constitution replaced included the term expressly when it was talking about the relationship between the national government established by the Articles and states. So it said if it's not expressly given to the national government, they don't have it. There was a motion made in the Senate to add, or the House, doesn't matter, to add expressly to the 10th Amendment. It failed. And it failed because people like James Madison and others believed that the government established under the Articles was, in their own terms, imbecilic. And what they wanted to do was to create a national government with enough power to meet whatever were the felt problems of the time. So I don't think the 10th Amendment helps you very much. It reminds you that the national government is limited in what it can do, but everybody agrees with that. What we don't agree on is what the specific limits are.
Sanford Levinson says for all the great debate we have as a nation over particular parts of the Constitution, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, we as a nation pay too little time to trying to understand the other ideas and laws included in the amendments that shape how our government works. Amendments that are not often fodder for bumper sticker slogans. He says he thinks the national conversation should pay heed to these concepts as well.
The most important parts of the Constitution are the ones, in fact, we never think about. What people shout and yell at each other about are the rights provisions of the Constitution. What's the meaning of free speech? What's the meaning of free exercise of religion? What in the world is the meaning of equal protection of the laws? I'm not saying these aren't important questions. What I am saying is that, first of all, they're subjects of endless arguments, and they're also subject to almost endless change. We've seen it in our own lifetimes. We've certainly seen it over history. Depending on who wins elections and appoints judges, you will get very different interpretations of all of these three amendments that I mentioned. Some people will be very happy. Some people will be very angry about the changes. But you're going to get changes. I believe that at the end of the day, the most important parts of the Constitution that explain why most people these days really are alienated, particularly from the national government. The approval rate of Congress on a good day will get above 15%. Often in recent years, it's been about 10%. And I've suggested that if you had had polls in 1776, that King George might have done better than the current Congress does. What I think frustrates people, and I don't think it matters whether you're in the left, right, or center on this, is a perception that whatever you believe are the main issues of the day, they're not being handled by Congress. Congress has become, depending on your point of view, a group of kindergartners, a group of terrorists, a group of whatever, fill in the blank. But nobody looks at Congress these days and says, you know, this is a group of fine, upstanding people really doing their best for the country. I don't think that Congress is composed of a bunch of scoundrels. At one level, I think this is probably the least corruption-free Congress in our history, if you define corruption as taking bribes. You know, in the old days, you could find people who were really selling their vote for cash. You can occasionally find this in some state legislatures, and state legislators regularly go to prison for bribery. It's been a long time since anything like that has happened at the national level. So it's not that kind of personal corruption that is the problem. Rather, it's a constitutional system that has never made its peace with the fact that we have political parties who are divided, and we have this remarkably complicated checks and balances, division of powers system that generates tons of opportunities to veto legislation, to block legislation you don't like, and makes it at times almost a miracle to pass legislation about controversial subjects.
Sanford Levinson says for all the great debate we have as a nation over particular parts of the Constitution, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, we as a nation pay too little time to trying to understand the other ideas and laws included in the amendments that shape how our government works. Amendments that are not often fodder for bumper sticker slogans. He says he thinks the national conversation should pay heed to these concepts as well.
I think that a lot of people think they know about the dull and boring details of the Constitution because maybe when they were in the seventh grade, they suffered through a civics course in which they learned, quote, how a bill becomes a law. The question I wish people would ask themselves is why do most bills stand no chance at all of becoming a law? And what I think, what I want people to do is not to go back and read the text of the 10th Amendment or the 14th Amendment. I'm not opposed to that. But I do think that actually more people than you may think are really familiar with the Second Amendment, the 10th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, because there are political movements that are built around one or another. There's something called the 10th Amendment Foundation that's very influential among political conservatives. And I suspect that a lot of members of the Tea Party can recite the 10th Amendment. Most people, even if they're dimly aware that we have the system for passing legislation that we do, don't really reflect on the fact that we have a bicameral system with a death ray veto of one branch of Congress over the other. But in a way, it gets even worse because the president has the veto power to make irrelevant what Congress passes. So ordinarily, we believe that the United States is a bicameral political system at the national level. I argue, no, we're a tricameral political system because of the role the president has in shaping legislation. And depending on your view of the Supreme Court, we could be viewed as a quadricameral. We came one vote from the Supreme Court simply negating the primary achievement of the Obama administration that would never have happened if both houses of Congress hadn't supported it. And so I say it's not that people might not know this in the back of their minds, but I don't think that they really reflect on it. There is no debate taking place in this country today of a kind that was taking place 100 years ago during the progressive movement. So I would love for people to read what they mistakenly believe are the dull and boring parts of the Constitution, the part of the Constitution that gives Wyoming the same vote in the Senate as California. That's extremely important. The fixed-term presidency, I think that it is a defect in our political system that we can't fire a president we've lost confidence in. And I could march through some other sorts of things. So these are the parts of the Constitution that I really wish people would read and debate with their fellow citizens about. 10th Amendment, 14th Amendment, First Amendment, Second Amendment, people ought to read them as well. But there's already enough debate that goes on about them.
Sanford Levinson is a constitutional law scholar and is the author of the book Framed, America's 51 Constitutions and the Crisis of Governance. He spoke last month on the University of Arkansas campus. This is Ozarks at Large.